Welcome to What's About Florida, a monthly discussion program tackling the key topics of interest to our state. I'm Lynn Hatter. Today, we're speaking with Republican Senator John Legg. He's the Senate's K-12 Education Committee Chairman and was first elected to the Florida House of Representatives in 2004. There, he served four terms. In the House, Legg was the chairman of the Pre-K-12 Committee, and in 2012, he was elected to the Florida Senate, where he has led the chamber's K-12 education efforts. Legg is also a Florida-certified teacher who's taught for more than a decade, and he played a key role in the establishment of many of the programs lawmakers are now reassessing, like end-of-course exams. Our conversation with Senator John Legg is coming up on It's About Florida. Well, Senator, thank you so much for taking the time out to talk with me.
Great, thank you.
I want to talk about issues in education, because you guys have a pretty substantial education agenda already, and most of the conversation so far has been about the issues facing K-12 when it comes to standardized testing. Mm-hmm. There's already been, you know, a call for a review. The governor has already pretty much directed the Department of Education to go ahead and do that. What's going to happen on the legislative end?
Well, what we're looking at, and starting for week one, we've already have both in the Education Appropriations Committee and the Education Policy Committee, we have the Commissioner of Education coming in and basically answering some questions regarding where we are with assessments, where we are with even some of the teacher evaluation issues, because they really go hand in hand together. And what we're looking at is how these the standardized assessments and the teacher evaluations are being implemented. You know, the assessment and the teacher evaluation issues is coming of age, if you will. They are not new things anymore. And what we want to look at is what we have designed or what was passed 10 years ago, 15 years ago, how is it being implemented, and has it evolved, and has it evolved too much to the point where it's becoming burdensome on the student, being burdensome on the teacher and the schools, and maybe addressing what it was intended to address, which was measuring student performance versus a whole litany of other issues. And so we're going to start with asking some tough questions. Based on those questions and the answers we get, I would anticipate some legislation coming forth that address some of the questions that come out of it.
Now, we're looking at a couple of different things here, right? We've got the end-of-course exams that have now pretty much come into play, along with the new test that's going to replace what people refer to as the FCAT. And from the people that I've spoken with, you've got kind of the school district saying, well, we have to create all of these hundreds of new tests. And, you know, the state saying, no, you don't. You know, you can avoid duplication. And obviously there is some in the system. You know, is that going to be something that you guys look at of kind of where to be able to pare down some of these things?
Absolutely. What we want to look at is what I want to make sure that we don't get involved with is the blame game, where it's the state pointing at the district pointing at the state. Because if that happens, at the end of the day, it's the students who'll lose out. So what we want to look at is you know, we believe, or I believe, that there is a need for assessments. Schools always, you know, have assessments involved with it. But to use my grandmother's old saying, a watch pot never boils, doesn't mean we want to just constantly assess and constantly test. And what we want to look at is, can we find some sort of concordant scores? Can we find some sort of substitutions that meet multiple purposes for the school district, for the teacher, and for accountability for the state level? So the ultimate goal would be fewer tests, better tests, more reliable, so we can have accountability, but at the same time that we are not assessment crazy and the state blaming the districts and the districts blaming the states, that we need to work together and find really a reasonable solution for our students.
You know, there's still a lot of concern over how some of these tests are going to be administered, and a lot of it comes from your smaller school districts, the rural school districts, who are like, we don't have the bandwidth, you know, our internet connections are really slow. And a lot of these have to be taken online. A lot of them will be taken online. So I want to ask you two questions. One is, you know, where is the legislature when it comes to making sure that the schools have the infrastructure needed? And then the second part of the question is, you know, are you guys at all concerned that once these tests go fully online, that the students will have the skills necessary
to take them. Because it's one thing to take a test on paper. It's another to have the typing skills, to have the inference skills, to be able to work the technology that they're going to be dealing with.
You know, last year we did a bill, the digital classroom bill, and basically that is a very challenging issue for our districts, because what we don't want to do is we don't want to expect our students to be the Mark Zuckerberg of the next generation while giving them Gutenberg technology. And we want them to work together. And so what we're trying to do, what we did last year, is we created a digital classroom allocation, $40 million, to help districts kind of bridge that infrastructure divide. We have more to go. The governor's called for $80 million. I personally think it needs to be more than that. I think we're looking at it around the $100 million range for the next multiple years to get us there. It won't happen overnight. We do need to get there, but we can get there. The digital divide is shrinking, and it's shrinking quickly. Even in the most poorest school districts and poorest schools, the technology divide is getting reduced. So we've got to find a way to get that infrastructure into the school. And I do believe the state took a significant first step last year. I believe we're going to go faster this year to get there, to bridge that divide. As it comes to the student skills, absolutely there is a different skill set when it comes to taking computer-based tests than paper and pencil tests. But it needs not to be mutually exclusive. Our students live in a digital era. You know, I look back and think the days of technology being something that we add to the students are over. Our students are immersed in technology. It is in them. I haven't been to a school in the last 2 years where almost every single student does not have some sort of technological device from middle school on up. So how do we integrate that, since they're already integrated, into an assessment? Our schools have asked for it because they realize that by going online, you get faster results, better results, and it could be manipulated for the teachers to use for diagnostic purposes and more instant feedback. So that is the direction I think we need to get to. How we get there is going to be through trial and error. Unfortunately, sometimes, and I'm a big fan of Tony Wagner out of Harvard, who says you got to fail, but you have to fail fast. Mm-hmm. You know, and we're going to make some mistakes when it comes to going to this area of technology, but we need to do it quickly, because our students are demanding it. They have passed us by technologically, our teachers, and so we're playing catch up to them. I know we can do it, but it's going to take the legislature, the school districts, the individual schools, and parents working together to get us there.
The Florida legislature passed the bill that said by, I believe, 2016, we would be almost fully digital. Learning materials would be digitized. Classrooms would be digitized. And every student would have a laptop, a MacBook, an iPad, or something. Mm-hmm. It seems like we're still struggling to get there, as you said earlier. And I just wonder, you know, you cited the figure of $80 million. I believe that there was a presentation last year that said last year we needed $80 million in order to kind of fully fund this, and the Florida legislature only appropriated $40. I want you to just kind of expand upon this issue, because it's something, you know, we have this goal in place. It's hard and fast. 2016 is only 12 months away. Mm-hmm. You know, it seems like there's kind of a bit of a clash between what we want and what we're willing to put into it.
Well, and what we don't want to do is we don't want to be LA United. Oh. And for those that don't know what LA United is basically out in LA, they spent $1 billion for laptops that basically went bust. Mm-hmm. And no one used them. It didn't know how to be implemented. And what we want to do is we want to scale up, you know, because technology isn't about giving every kid a laptop, an iPad, or an Android. It's about integrating digital curriculum into the school. It's about professional development. It's about assessments. It's about curriculum. It's about infrastructure. It's about outcomes. It's about all those components. And what you don't want to do is you don't want to put a big funnel of money without any parameters to the school districts and without them knowing how to even implement it. What we did year one was we created basically a process, an application process where we asked the districts to lay out your plan. Mm-hmm. How are you going to implement this using these dollars? We know it's only $40 million for year one, but as we move there, how will you address professional development, infrastructure, assessments, curriculum, devices, outcomes? How will you do that, and what further dollars are you going to need to implement that to be fully digital? What my hope is as we've now got those 67 plans back, DOE has those 67 plans back in there, we can look at those plans, see what the best plans were, learn from those plans, and we can build upon that by increasing the dollars. I'm very optimistic that we will get $80 million. Now, it can't be a one and done deal. It cannot be, we did $40 million last year, $80 million this year. Oh, and we solved our technology problem. It will, in my mind, technology funding needs to be here, and it needs to be here to stay. You know, it's not about one given that device and then, oh, that's all we need to do. It's about how do we really rechange our learning environment to compete in a digital environment. The days of, you know, the education talk of the sage on the stage, where you have the teacher in front of the classroom, the kids lined up in neat rows, they really don't exist anymore. It's about kids using devices and looking up on Google how to get information, using the teacher as a resource, coaching them along the way to solve problems. You know, I grew up, I guess I would say I'm a Generation X person. You have Generation Y, you have all these. You know, looking at it, I think we're in the I generation. I mean, we're in this I generation where it involves innovation. It revolves, I meaning innovation. Our students aren't just about memorizing things anymore. It's about how do they innovate. It's about individual customization. How can that class now fit their needs? And technology helps us do that. And the last part of it is it's about involvement. It's about involvement of their ideas. It's involvement about their imaginations. And how can we use technology to kind of use those things to unleash that versus drilling them for a test, drilling them for certain things, and it's integrating those three I's together. And I think technology does that. But as any superintendent will tell you, it's not cheap. It's hard to get there. And people are going to make mistakes. They're going to make mistakes in rolling this out. But the alternative is to do nothing, and our students will suffer, and they will be sitting in a classroom with their own iPhone, looking up their own research, Googling how to do things on their own, and be educated differently than what the teacher's even doing them in the classroom, because they are a different student than what has been in the previous generation.
You're listening to It's About Florida. We've been speaking with State Senator John Legg about the myriad of education issues lawmakers will take up when they return for the annual lawmaking session. One of those issues is how to grow the state's public school career training programs. Now, back to our conversation. 2 years ago, the Florida legislature passed a bill that was really pushed heavily by Senate President Don Gates that dealt with reestablishing career academies. Back in our high schools. When I went to high school, we had things like shop and actually things where you could get your nursing certification. It went away for a while and now it's back. But the issue still remains when it comes to these things, how to get them funded. You have now a system where some schools have, and they have a lot of them, and you have a situation where some schools don't have. You know, it's something that the legislature, you know, put in place. We got to fund it. And it's kind of, many of the districts are saying, you know, we want to do them, but we don't have the resources to get them off the ground.
Well, you know, I don't necessarily agree that the districts don't have the resources when it comes to industry certifications. Industry certifications are, you know, it's not your daddy's workshop. It's mm-hmm. different. You know, the days of the auto mechanic shop of the Greece era are gone. I mean, it's dealing with technology. It's dealing with high tech issues.
It's AutoCAD.
It's AutoCAD. It's using high tech skills that students need to learn, and our schools want to go that direction. Mm-hmm. What we want to do in the legislature is, or I want to do, is to help pay for performance on those areas. is if our schools are providing industry certifications, they should get extra funding for those. But a simple attempt to provide it and not having quality career academies, I don't think are acceptable. For example, to say we have a Photoshop, and I'm just using that as an example, and that's not all Photoshops aren't equal, but the days of the Photoshop of the early 90s, if you're still doing that today, you shouldn't get extra dollars for that. But if you're doing a computerized-based program that helps students learn how to use multimedia and gets an industry certification upon completion of high school where they can go right into a job making $40,000 a year, absolutely there needs to be weighted dollars on that. Last year, we expanded the president, former President Don Gates, Career Academies with the CAPE bill, Career and Professional Education Act, where we provided high school substitutions. So instead of taking, and I'm using this as probably a poor example, but instead of taking a biology 2, you could take a medical science industry certification to substitute for that high school graduation requirement. It is, you know, theoretically no more expensive to do that class. Now, I use the word theory because some of those classes require equipment and capital and structure, infrastructure and other issues. But what we're looking at is how can we allow those substitutions that make them college or career ready? So that way they can do both. They can go college or career or they decide. The key to, in my view, is we want to attach dollars, but those dollars have to be linked to performance. An attempt at a career academy's industry certification, I think, is not sufficient. It needs to actually be completion, and it needs to be completion in a real-world paying job. And we have that now in Florida through our Department of Labor Statistics, where we know that we need nurses. We know we need medical professionals. We know we need information technology specialists. So let's align those industry certifications in our high school with what is in the job market and then pay for performance in getting there. But to write a simple blank check in the FEFP, I do not think is a way for us to drive that. Because what you'll have is you'll have industry certifications on the cheap that don't relate to real jobs. And that's you're going to see that discussion this year, especially coming from, I would imagine, Don Gates, who was the former superintendent of Okaloosa, who really started this movement.
I wonder about this only because I know of some districts, many of them in the panhandle, that are just very tiny. I use, for example, Jefferson County, which is right next door to us 3 years ago. I mean, they were bouncing checks. You know, they want career academies. They're trying to figure out how to fund them. Just because that's their situation. What about those? You know, I know you said, you know, attempting to do it is not sufficient. They want to do it. They just don't have the money to do it.
Well, and obviously your rural districts, you know, Florida is a wonderful place. We're very diverse. You have large, you know, 300, 400,000 student districts like Miami, small counties such as Hamilton that has 1,400 or 1,700 students. What we have to look is we have to be innovative. There's no way that Hamilton County is going to be able to provide a deep, robust industry certification for all their students. Mm-hmm. They have 1,700 students. They have one high school. Mm-hmm. But what we can do is you know, we need to look beyond kind of our county borders. Mm-hmm. That's not to say Hamilton County can't provide an industry certification and the county next to it provide a different one. And work with those to break down that geographical boundary of a street or a line that says, you know, my student in Hamilton may want to go to the district across them because they have an aeronautics academy, because that's what that community said they wanted to focus on, while the other community may want to focus on medical science. We are not going to be able to be all things to all people, especially in the rural areas, because the density is simply not there. So what you will see from the legislature this year are opportunities for collaboration, opportunities to work together to create those plans and to move it forward. Again, this is a system where we're moving forward. We don't have all the answers on how to do it. But what we do know is that career-ready jobs out of high school using industry certifications are in demand. And how do we maximize that with being respectful to taxpayers' dollars and not waste them, but how do we do it and to get those students out of high school to either into college or directly into the workforce?
And I guess my last question on that point is what a lot of these smaller districts fear is, you know, when their students leave and go to another district, the money follows the student. You know, are you guys going to be looking at that to say, you know, if my county doesn't offer this, but my student wants to go to another county, if the money could stay in the district, or would it still be the same money follow the student?
Well, you know, those are the tough questions our committees are going to have to discuss. And the chairman of that committee is Don Gates, mm-hmm. the Education Appropriations Chairman. There are real problems. There are real logistical problems. And without giving the cliche, we can't let adult issues impact children. There are questions that have to be asked. But there, again, I go back to those rural counties. They can't offer every industry certification. It's just physically impossible, or they would have three students or four students in a medical program, and you just don't have the numbers to support it. So what we have to find is innovative ways to not let those geographical boundaries hinder it, and to kind of promote people to be experts, you know, the ace of something instead of king of nothing. So
something that I believe the House really dealt with largely last year was this issue of our voluntary pre-kindergarten programs. And I believe it was Representative O'Toole who was really pushing to find a way to make these programs more accountable. That actually remains an issue this year. And I wonder if there's any consideration being paid to how do I know if this VPK provider is a good provider. You've got these little mom and pop shops on almost every corner, and quality remains a point of concern.
Quality counts, and that's simple. And last year, you know, when working with our partners in the House, we did put together a bipartisan bill, and the Senate did pass it the last day of session, but the clock simply ran out of time on us to kind of get it over the finish line. Week one, I believe in being methodical in our committee, week one, the very first issue that we're bringing up is early learning. Mm-hmm. We're taking the bill that the Senate passed last year, and we will be refiling that as kind of the base bill to move forward going forward, where we bring a higher degree of transparency and accountability to the VBK providers. Now, with that said, the state can't provide all the VPK options. I want faith-based providers. We want home providers for individuals, small industries, small providers, because they are high-quality providers out there. But what we want to make sure we do is that we make it very transparent for our parents to know which ones are high-quality. And at the same time, we want to shut down the bad actors, that those individuals that have not done their due diligence and background screening, that are child care and not education oriented. Mm-hmm. And I want to emphasize that this is not free child care. This needs to be an education oriented program that we get them ready through, you know, kindergarten screening, make them available to pass their kindergarten readiness test. We will be working with the House. We'll be filing a bill that does that, and we're hoping that we'll be successful this year and taking that quality step forward.
Are we talking about maybe establishing a rating system for some of these? The same way, I mean, we grade schools A, B, C, D, F, you know, maybe 1, 2, 3, 4 or something like that?
You know, those are some discussions that you know, I don't want to, you know, I'm one of 40 in our committee. What the challenge that we've set for our committee is that we need to bring a higher level of quality and accountability to our VPK providers. Mm-hmm. If that means a rating system, whether it's a star rating system or some sort of system, I'm comfortable with it. But we need to work to how does that develop? The reality of it is though that we need to make sure that quality exists in our early learning system. Because research shows it's undeniable that when our students come in ready to learn at kindergarten, they will do better in their first few years of education.
Something I've been wondering about is this ongoing issue with the students with disabilities and how they are counted in our school grading formula. We recently had a decision. We came to a truce with the U.S. Department of Education over that. But also how we test them. And I'm wondering if there is going to be any further consideration of that this session.
You know, students with disability is really a hard issue to thread, a hard needle to thread. Because what you want is you want to provide common sense exemptions from certain requirements for students because of their disability. But what you don't want is you don't want an excuse to be made for a student and dumping of students who could achieve higher if simply given the opportunity and the resources to achieve higher. You know, our Senate President Andy Gardner is very sensitive to this issue. He has a child that has unique opportunities for himself, and so he's very sensitive to these issues. And I would anticipate this will be another issue that he's going to ask our committee to look at. Is how do we address students with disabilities? As was mentioned earlier, the our feds gave us kind of honored Florida's 2-year ELL, English Limited Learners provision, which was absolutely critical. You can't expect a student to learn the English language in 1 year and then be and perform at the same level. We felt they needed 2 years, and so we got that waiver. We got that requirement, and it was hard fought by our governor, our commissioner, and others to do that. And it was the right answer out of Washington for once. And so this allows us that flexibility. We need to constantly monitor when it comes to the children with disabilities, but we don't want to craft a loophole so wide that students who could perform well are simply dumped into a category because it's convenient for the adults. And that's something that we want to watch out for, but we'll be looking at it.
I know last year you guys went back in and kind of revised the waiver process for the Florida Alternative Assessment. That was something that a lot of people had issue with last year. What issue are you most concerned about for the upcoming legislative session?
You know, I think we have converging lines of opportunity here with teacher evaluation, technology, testing, school grades, all coming to a head in 2015 and 2016. We have a unique opportunity to do this, and I think we can do great things and do it right, and we don't have to cry the sky is falling. What I think our greatest challenge this year is how to bring reasonable testing and protect reasonable testing, but eliminate some of the duplicate nature of it. And I think it's time to look at some of the teacher evaluation implementation of asking ourselves the question is, how do we do these teacher evaluation? Is it equitable? At what level or percentage should data influence it? What percentage and how should principal evaluation? Should we use peer evaluation from what we've learned in Hillsborough County? These are some questions that I'm most excited about looking at this session of how can we use this next year to answer those four questions.
Well, Senator, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
Thanks to Senator John Legg. You've been listening to It's About Florida, a production of WFSU-FM. I'm Lynn Hatter. Taylor Cox provides technical assistance. Please join us again next month for more discussion on the issues impacting our state. We'll be speaking with more of the state's top legislative leaders in the run-up to the 2015 lawmaking session.